Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delshree Gladden. I'm a USA Today bestselling author of over 30 published novels, and I'm currently dealing with allergies, so I sound awful. I apologize to our listeners for that. Springtime in New Mexico is lovely, but also tries to kill me every year. This week, I have guests that I'm excited to talk to, and this really doesn't have the typical Four Corners connection, but this was an author in a book that when your publicist reached out, I was really excited to bring this to our listeners. It is something a little bit different, and hopefully everyone will enjoy that. I have Audrey Birnbaum, and she's going to be talking about her book, American Wolf. Audrey, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, hi, Delshree. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Yes, I realize that I'm not your typical guest because I listen to some of your other podcasts. And first of all, I'm from the East. I'm from New York. Actually, I just recently came from Southeast Asia, so I feel like I'm from the far, far East. And I'm a little jet lagged, but I will stay awake for this. And also, I'm not your typical author. Physician by training. I retired fairly recently in 2020, just before the pandemic, which was not intentional. It was completely accidental. I actually had to give 6 months notice. So I, you know, had no idea what was in the works. But it was partially because of the pandemic that I sat down and started to write this book, American Wolf. But I was a practicing pediatric gastroenterologist before that with a 35-year career. And I guess I did do writing, you know, as part of the career, you know, but it was more, I mean, I wrote chapters about pancreatitis and liver transplants and diarrhea and things that, you know, are very different from this book. And this book is actually a true story about my father's experience escaping Nazi Germany in 1941, you know, well into the start of World War II, and eventually his return to Germany as a spy for American intelligence during the height of the Cold War. So that's the very, very basic bare bones of the story.
And like I said, I was just really captivated by this idea of you taking your dad's notes and things that he had written down, which you kind of discovered the bulk of after his death, and being able to turn this into this book. So I wanted to start by getting into that process and how that came about. I think that's something a lot of people, you think about, you know, where your family came from or different people in your family, their life histories, and they have interesting stories. This is quite the story. This is really just amazing.
Yes, I mean, thank you. I mean, I'm just glad to be on the show because part of the reason I wrote it was because I thought it was a story that just needed to be told. You know, a lot of Holocaust stories need to be told. I thought this one was a little bit different. But how I came upon it was, I mean, my sister and I have an older sister. She's just a couple years older. We're very close. And my father was a talker. You know, some people like don't talk about their Holocaust experiences. Mm-hmm. My father talked about it all the time, but not with a lot of that he had lost. I didn't really know how much he lost, but he would talk about it almost as an adventure because, you know, he was one who had escaped and he wasn't in the camps. He was young. He was only 11 when he came to this country. And so I didn't really like get the sense of the horrors that he had been through. But he had some kind of like a perverse pride in the fact that he was a survivor. And so that's kind of the sense that we got. He was proud of being a German, which was also kind of perverse because a lot of, you know, people in America were very anti-German. A lot of Jewish people were very anti-German, but he sort of wore it as a matter of pride. So we had this sort of like bizarre sense of what the story was about. And we were immersed in it from a very, very young age. We saw a lot of Holocaust documentaries when we were young, really young, like 5, 6 years old. And so we kind of felt like, well, we grew up with it. We knew the story. And so at some point we stopped talking about it and we thought we knew it. And then when my father passed away in 2018 after a battle with dementia, and we were going to give his eulogy and I volunteered to do so. I happened to have a broken leg at the time. I was on crutches and non-weight bearing. It was sort of a bad time for me as well. And so I said, okay, well, I'll go, give his eulogy. I said, we'll talk about how he was on the very last boat to leave Spain. And my sister said, like, no, it was Portugal. And I said, no, it was Spain. And we looked at each other, we're like, wait a minute, we're in big trouble here because we obviously don't know the details. They're lost and we have nobody to ask. And at that point, and we're sitting there crying, and we're like, we don't know anything, and Dad's gone, and we can't ask him. And so, and my mother was like, my mother, who fortunately is alive at 88, amazing. But at the time, she said, well, Dad wrote everything down, don't you remember? And in fact, about maybe 13 years before, he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, which fortunately he survived. But he thought he was, at the time, he was going to die. So he had sat down and spent months writing down everything that he could remember. And so he typed out over 350 pages of notes from memory. And he had been through trauma. And so he documented everything. And it's not that we didn't know. He had given it to us. And it was, in fact, like too detailed and too dry and too hard to get through. And so we kind of didn't read it. And we tucked it away. So I had it in my attic. And before his funeral, I kind of like dragged myself and my broken leg up my stairs, grabbed it, dusted it off, found out what I needed to know for a proper eulogy, and then once again, put it aside. So fast forward to the time that I was not working and thought, I'm going to do all these things when I'm not working. I'm going to take dance lessons and learn how to draw. And I had this whole plan, travel. And then my mother kept saying, Dad really wanted to publish his book. Like what he wrote, he thought was a publishable book, but it wasn't really readable for a general audience. But I felt like this obligation to put it into words that people could read and appreciate. And so that's what I set out to do.
Well, and it seems like that is a big task.
It was a big task.
I'm curious.
It took me 3 years.
So yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about that process because that's kind of not really my area of writing. It's something I've contemplated with some of my grandpa's life. He's unfortunately passed away as well, but I have notes and photos and things, and it's just kind of one of those that it's like, man, where do you start with that? And people have asked me similar questions of like wanting to write their story or a family member's story, and I'm kind of like, I don't know, like that's not something I've attempted. I don't have good advice on that. So I'm curious what your process was, like how you approached that. Because I think there are people out there who want to do something like that with their family stories, but don't know where to start.
Yeah. So I can only tell you what I did. I do know, by the way, that there are, for people who just want to like find out their family stories, there are some websites that help people learn about their family and ask interview style questions and family members, which I can share with you at the end of the show if you're interested, because it's come up before. How do you even find out your family history? But that's another story for another day. What I did is I had this huge body of material that was a little bit, a little repetitive at times, sometimes not in order, sometimes not. I wasn't sure of the accuracy of it because he would write certain things down. I would realize that historically it wasn't always accurate. So I realized I had to fact check a lot of things. But more importantly, I think when people tell their memories, they have a certain style of saying it. Then it'll be like this. We would wake up in the morning and we would do this every day. My mother would make eggs for breakfast every morning. So I'm just making it up, but that would be, there was a certain style of telling and not showing, which is makes for not particularly interesting reading, because even though it's a true story, you really, as a reader, want to read it the way you would read a novel. And similarly, when you read nonfiction of any kind, good nonfiction should read like a story. I think we all know that you really want to be immersed in a story that's still gripping, that still leaves you, that every paragraph should feel like it's almost like a cliffhanger. Like, well, what happens next? Well, what happens next? You know, well, did they make it? And so, I mean, I haven't done any creative writing. I mean, I know how to structure a sentence, but I read enough to know what I like to read. And, you know, what he did do is he provided the factual content, and he, of course, his memories were vignettes, you know, so because that's how you remember things. I remember the time I learned how to ride a bicycle. Well, you know, that's actually could be potentially very boring, or it could be potentially, if written well and brought into what is Germany like in 1930s when Hitler's just rising to power, it can be woven into a story where you get the feeling of what does it really feel like to be a Jewish boy growing up in Germany and losing your friends and not being able to go to school and going from middle class to destitute and living through Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass. But you have to be able to bring your audience, feel like you're there. So I had to rewrite everything so that you could feel like you're there. And I didn't know if I could do it because I'd never done it before. But I think I was able to do it because people seem to like the book. I couldn't say objectively, but the book actually won the, it was a finalist in the National Jewish Book Awards. So yes. Objectively, I would say that I think people thought it was okay. So for a first timer, I'll say it did the trick. But I think I was able to see it all as a movie in my head. Mm-hmm. I still could see every scene. And I was like, I kind of went there and I felt like I became my father's voice. I felt like I was him and I was living it and I could see it all. So there was somehow some transformation that I went through as I was writing. That was like, it was sort of an out of body experience, which I know sounds really weird and overly dramatic, but I definitely can tell you that while I was writing, I didn't know where I was, what room I was in, where I was sitting, except that I felt like I was in Germany in the 1930s.
And I would say you absolutely did do a very good job of creating those details in the scenes that you could really experience it. That was something I was struck by in the very first pages. And it was kind of interesting because as I started reading American Wolf, my students, I teach ninth grade English, we were beginning to work on their narrative short story project, which was their midterm exam, basically. And the first rounds of everything I got from my students was, I have a character, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened. You know, and that was what they were understanding as storytelling, of just, like you're saying, kind of the notes of we would do this and we would do this, like telling the facts of what they remember. And it was really challenging to get a lot of my students to understand, okay, no, you're summarizing a story. You're not telling a story. So we need to think about this, you know, if this was the opening scene of a TV show, what are you going to see when the show starts? What does the room look like? How are the characters moving? How do they talk to each other? And some of them started to get it over time, and then others, it wasn't really clicking. So I think that's really fascinating that you, not coming from a creative writing background, were able to take your experience of being a reader and a consumer of media and transition those notes from your father into these really beautiful scenes that I thought did such a good job of painting the picture of this little boy observing these changes in his country and not understanding a lot of it, especially in those early chapters where he's watching his family, he's watching his friends, he's watching his building community in that neighborhood change, and he's not really grasping the weight or the causes behind it, but you're seeing it through his eyes. And I thought that was such a wonderful way to present that portion of his life, because you really got a sense of being in that environment and then watching it change with him as you moved through the chapters. And I really enjoyed that.
I thank you. I didn't know that you'd read it. Not all people I've been interviewed by have read the book. So I'm so appreciative that you did. And thank you so much. I think being a pediatrician, I mean, a mother, of course, too, but I think being a pediatrician was helpful in terms of understanding the authentic part of what a child would see. Somebody said to me, it was my cousin, my first cousin, actually, she said, did your father really remember all of that? And I mean, first of all, I think the answer is absolutely yes. You know, I didn't change anything except I added dialogue, you know what I mean? But it's all factual unless I specifically stated in reference anything that I added. But what, you know, again, when you remember, can remember very early, you know, important events, you don't remember being three, but you remember when you did something bad and your mother hit you. You'll remember that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, seminal events in your life. And you can string them together into a meaningful story in the context of history. But again, through the eyes of a child, which can be very distorted, mm-hmm. of course, because you don't understand, right? You don't understand the context at all. So it would be distorted. And I mean, some things I assume my father, that he thought he might have remembered at a certain age and he might not have, you know, it's always possible that he attributed it to his 4-year-old memory, but it might mm-hmm. not have been true, but you know, that he might have remembered it later or it was discussed afterwards, mm-hmm. many times over. But for the most part, like, I think I was able to, and knowing him too, I have to say, like, I was writing about somebody I knew very well, though I will say that in the process of writing it, I knew him much better. And it resolved a lot of issues for me that, because he wasn't the easiest man in the world, because he really did have a very traumatic early history, and that created a lot of behaviors in adulthood that made it hard for me and my sister growing up. So I think there was a lot of resolution in writing it that, I mean, I had resolved any anger towards him early on for how he treated or raised us. So I was over that. But in terms of fully understanding his demons, the process of writing it, I think, really was therapeutic.
I bet. And what an interesting experience to have as an adult to be able to get that complete of a history of what a parent went through and being like, okay, like, yeah, I understand where a lot of that came from. Because most of us don't get that opportunity. We work through and we deal with our issues with our parents, you know, but a lot of the times we never truly understand where that came from. So what a fascinating experience for you to have and probably to share some of that with your sister. And I would imagine that brings up some really interesting conversations of generational trauma and just what those early life experiences do to a person, even into adulthood, and how difficult that is to work through, especially for him in a time where, you know, there wasn't counseling, there wasn't an awareness of, we need to help people who've been through trauma and deal with that. It's just kind of like, well, it's over, so move on with your life. And that's not helpful.
Being like tough was good too. You know, I mean, he had a lot of resilience, mm-hmm. I think, which was great. I mean, I think they would never have made it here had they not had resilience. And, you know, his mother was very resilient, his father less so, but so good. But, and I think, you know, we were raised to be very tough and resilient, but that's not always good because you don't solve, you know, those inner demons that you know, you don't resolve those issues. But and he had a lot of unresolved issues, and I think a lot of tremendous fears of, you know, having lost so many people and so many things in his life, that you know, the feeling that things could all be lost at any time, that we might have to run at any time, that finances could disappear at any time, you know. And I think he lived his life with that fear and held on to us very tightly as a result. And that impacted us and does still. I mean, I think, you know, so whether that intergenerational trauma is on our DNA or whether it's how we were raised, I don't know. I can't say. You could do a DNA test.
It's an interesting topic that's kind of epigenetics. Beginning. Yeah.
I hope it got diluted my children, but probably not. I don't know, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I can't, but I can't, you know, I can't blame him, but you know, I understand it. I understand, you know, for me, I think this book, what's different about, again, there were two things that I thought were really interesting about his story. One was, you know, again, he left Germany so late, so he really lived through a lot of, he left on the very last boat that was allowed to leave Europe. And the boat, these boats were not talked about very much. And his boat was called the Navarmar, was called a floating concentration camp, or otherwise referred to as quote unquote the hellship of death, which was because it was written about in a lot of papers when it got to New York. There was an epidemic on board of typhoid fever, and it was there was death aboard the ship. It was pretty bad conditions. But then the other thing I think that was interesting was that when he got here, they didn't have great support mechanisms, and they didn't fare that well. And I think as an immigration tale that really is very universal, it isn't just the Holocaust or the Jewish experience, but just what it's like to be an emigree and be a displaced person, especially for his parents being middle-aged, never really grasping the language, being isolated, and for him being like so alone. And being having this identity crisis, I think, was so hard, where he wanted so hard to be American, which is where the title comes from, American Wolf. Wolf was his given name. And as soon as he came here, he was told, drop it. He'll be made fun of. So he tried to become an American, and it never really stuck. And so he was homesick for Germany, but everybody hated Germans because now we were at war with Germany. He was never particularly Jewish growing up, but there was anti-Semitism, so he got labeled Jewish regardless. And he just really never really found his identity. He was always kind of straddling several identities. So that's kind of where the title comes from, even though the American Wolf is a very popular species. There's a lot of American Wolf books that are nature books that you'll find when you look it up.
Well, yours should stand out then.
That's a perfect name for the book. It's perfect. But I think because he had these linguistic skills, he kind of came into his own, realizing that he was a little bit of both. He was, mm-hmm. He would never be fully American. He resolves his anger towards Germans, kind of rediscovered his German roots, and then and found happiness with my mother, who accepted him hook, line, and sinker. Didn't know what she was getting into.
Well, and one of the things that really attracted me to the book as well is, like you said, not a lot of people always talk about their traumatic experiences, whether that's, war or something else. And right now, we're different countries and different things going on in the world. But how many people today are still facing some of these same things that your father and his family went through? We have so many immigrants coming in now from Ukraine and other areas that are facing, war and safety issues and coming for other reasons. And I thought it was really wonderful to see such a detailed personal account of your father and his family, and really kind of that hope of, people reading it and maybe having a little bit more compassion for people who are experiencing something similar today and trying to navigate that displacement and what that does to you as a person, as well as your relationships, and just having everything taken away and uproot yourself and be dropped in this place that's completely unfamiliar. That's really hard for me to fathom, like what that would be like and what that does to a person. And that's happening to people every single day right now.
Yeah, you raise a really interesting point. And, I'm very grateful to my publisher, Amsterdam Publishers, which has made a point of publishing the Holocaust story specifically. There is something very unique about the Holocaust, but at the same token, because it was, again, it was a government-sponsored extermination of an entire people, but all over the world all the time and have been for history. And they share similar themes and immigration, displacement, and war, a lot in common, and they're all awful, and they always affect children disproportionately, and there's always violence against women, and there's always starvation, so you see these similar themes, and they're pretty much awful. So, there was a wave with Syrian refugees. My father was just starting to have dementia at the time. And when he would see like images of Syrian children, Syrian refugees, I would start to cry a little bit. But he would get really upset. And my mother would say, oh, it's a good thing like your father doesn't really understand what's going on, because he, even when he sees it, he gets so upset, because I think it particularly bothered him, because it's almost like a PTSD thing for him to see people trying to get out or something, But if it's not that, then it was Ukraine, you know, that it's Gaza. It is not a political question. It's a human question. Yeah. So I think, you know, when my book came out, it was right after October 7th and right after war started in Gaza. My publisher said, oh, I don't know how people will feel, you know, depending on their politics. And like, this is not a political question. This is a human question. It's universal. And I know everybody says never again, but I have to say, never again. Let's not kid ourselves. Always and forever. You know, it's just a cycle that will continue to repeat itself, sadly. But it doesn't hurt to, I mean, all of us, I think, increase our humanity by reading books, whether they're novels or true stories. It will make us more empathetic. That's why we should read or see movies or whatever to understand a human perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's better than going on Twitter, certainly.
The endless scrolling of pointlessness. Yeah. Yeah. No, and I do. I hope that, you know, people check out the books. I really enjoyed it. It was a wonderful read in the storytelling, not wonderful things happening.
I hope you laughed a little bit. I mean, I try to be a little funny.
Yeah.
It's not, no, it's not totally, you know, it's sad things happen, but there is, I think there's elements of lightness.
Yeah. And it's very relatable. And like you said, like, I hope just that compassion comes through of other people's experiences. Yes, politics is always in everything, but taking that step back to look at the human side of the issue and just thinking, you know, what are we doing to each other? Is there a way that we can help and just be kinder to the people around us? I think that's always needed and always a step in a better direction. And I really felt like American Wolf, like that helped just bring that reminder to the forefront of people go through some really awful stuff, and we can hold back some of our own thoughts and judgments on that to be just a little bit more aware and more compassionate of other people.
Well, I'm so glad my book made it all the way to the four corners. No, I'm really so, thank you. You're such a generous host, and thank you for reading it and sharing it with your guests.
I'm glad I got the opportunity.
With your audience.
Yes. Well, and we are already out of time, but I did want to give you a chance to let people know, where can they find you in the book and stay up to date? Because I know your website mentioned you're working on your second book. So where can they stay up to date on all of that and stay in contact?
Thank you. Yes, I'm working on a second book. It's a novel. It's about travelers, you know, on a hiking trip together. It's sort of an ensemble cast of different types of people put into circumstances. They're real human characters that you will recognize. And it's funny, but with a little bit of thriller to it as well. My website is audreybirnbaumauthor.com. And I'm also on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn as Audrey Birnbaum Author. I think I'm most of those. And the book's on Amazon. It can be ordered through local bookstores. And I hope everyone enjoys reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
And I hope so too. And thank you so much, Audrey, for taking the time to chat with me today and tell us about American Wolf.
The pleasure was mine. Thank you so, so much.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.